An oral history interview with Edward R. Lovell at his home, 3916 Pine Avenue, Long Beach, California. The date is July 6, 1988, and the interviewer is Ann Andries. Mr. Lovell, I know that you were not born in Long Beach, but you came here quite young.
Quite. Over 65 years ago or more, I suppose.
In Washington?
In Wenatchee, Washington, yes. And parents were up there raising apples and running an electric plant and things like that. And cleared the land and planted their orchard.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold out and went back in Minneapolis for a little bit, I guess. And father's parents had come to Covina, and from Iowa, of course. And so he was out here at Covina as a young man, and went to the University of California at Berkeley. And then he got involved in this stuff with his brother up in Wenatchee, and so then they came back down here again, came out here. And so he built the house on Park Avenue, which was Santa Fe in those days, I think around 21 or 22. And it was the first house within six blocks. Diamond House.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it kind of set a pattern for a lot of the architecture of the Heights at that time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Look, and the house is still there. My sister lives next door. But anyway, that's so I was raised here. I do remember my fourth birthday. And
what kind of work did your father do in Long Beach?
Well, from the sale of the lands up in Wenatchee now, so he came down and purchased property on Pine Avenue. He had some apartments and storefronts and
things. Close to downtown?
Yeah, downtown.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole family had, his brothers and his sister had property on Pine Avenue in the early days. And the touch. There's no levels on Pine Avenue anymore. On that Pine Avenue.
Except
this end, yeah. Right. And, they had there was a level building down there someplace. I've got it someplace, you know, where it was. And the 6th Avenue, 6th Street School, I think, was at the corner of 6th and Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And the school district sold that to my uncle. And then you build a building there.
Mm.
It was kind of interesting, way back.
Was your father involved at all in the oil?
He wasn't foresighted enough. Just like none of us bought any land out in Lakewood right after the war, either.
What did you go to in Lakewood?
I went to kindergarten in Fremont while they were building Lowell. And then my first grade in Lowell, through there in Jefferson and Wilson. And so I'm an East Sider, you might say, mm-hmm. completely, really.
What made you decide to go to Oregon State?
Well, father wanted me to go to USC, and I love to tell this to SC people. But anyway.
It's okay. I'm a Cal person. You can tell me anything.
I told him, I don't want to go to SC. In fact, if you insist that I go to SC, I will not go to college at all. And for anybody in our family to talk to father like that, it was cardinal sin almost, you know. And he got mildly upset about it and wanted to know why. And I said, well, look at your daughter. She goes up there and she's home every weekend. If I go to college, I want a college. I don't want a hot dog stand across the street and all the interruptions and the stuff. I can see all that around here. So, talked about it, and I said, I think that I want to go this too, up to Oregon State University. I had a friend that was going to go up that way, and was going to go to Oregon. And I said, well, if I go up there, I'm going to go to Oregon State rather than Oregon. Oregon was too social. I've heard enough about that, and that's where lots of Long Beach people went, the University of Oregon at that time. They went up there, they went to Colorado, seems like. But, so I did. I almost died of homesickness, didn't realize it, you know, when we got up there. But it was a great experience in that everything that happened at the school happened on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the town was such a big metropolitan city, it had two beer halls and one bowling alley, and I guess there were two theaters. And if you coughed when you went through, you missed the town, you know. It was so small. And the university was small. It was roughly 3,000 students, I think.
Is that for now?
Mm-hmm. And so, after I got myself organized and took, you know, a month or so, well, from then on, it was just absolutely the greatest experience, you know. And Wilson High at that time was a very social school. I suppose it still is, I don't know. But we never had a formal dance in town. Oh, what a drag, you know. It had to be Miracle or the Dalmati or the Bel Air or, you know, wherever, as long as it was out of town. And formal dances and all that sort of thing. And when I went up to Oregon State, most of the girls as freshmen had never had a formal.
Mm.
They'd never heard the big band. You know, we used to go to Palomar and things like that. So it was an entirely different culture, entirely different. And I just sat back and just enjoyed it all, because to watch these kids, and the kids would mature when they got in as a junior. You just saw them open up, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've time and again, young people have come to me and wanted to know about schools and so on. I said, why don't you go to San Luis Obispo? Why would I go there? You know, it's right down the star.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're so far away from L.A. or San Francisco, you're not going to get there, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, when I was Portland, was just 83 miles up down the river, but nobody had a car. There was one car in the fraternity house. You know? So if you went, you had to find somebody with a car, you had to rent a car, you had to get on the train or the bus. So you didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
And everything happened right there. All the dances, everything. And concert, the symphony would come down and play, and the big band would swing through, you know, and that sort of thing. So, well, that's why I just try to push them off to some little school like that, where they're getting excellent education, you know.
Did you have in mind when you went there that you wanted to become a landscape
architect? No, there's going to be a horticulture of some kind. I didn't know where. But I didn't know just what it was going to be. So I took the beginning courses and such horrible things as agronomy and ag engineering and all those terrible things. And well, I was convinced I really didn't care about durum wheat and club oats and things like that, you know, bread or something. But after you got through with all this required first year courses and second year courses, well, then I decided what I was going to do, so I changed over to the landscape department and stayed there. It cost me another year to go to school, but stayed there and finished, and then went back after the war.
Were there a lot of colleges, universities offering?
Yes, surprisingly a number. Oregon State was the first one west of the Mississippi, which always surprises me. Why, I don't know. Washington State, Cal, Berkeley, Illinois, Pennsylvania, New York, a number of them, right around New York, Cornell, Georgia. Well, that's all I can remember now. But there were a number of, but it was still, our classes were, I think at one time we had 8. And there was only 2 other seniors and myself, I think, at that time. And so you got all the instruction in the world, you know. And we had an elderly professor, head of the department, and he was from Amherst. And then we had a young liberal type guy also. And so you got the two atmospheres that you might want to study in. So the elderly professor came to me one time and looked at the guy and said, "Do you know what you're doing?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." He said, "Okay," he said, "I don't understand what you're doing at all." He said, "That isn't my schooling, you know?" He said, "But Mr. Lake says you're doing fine, so keep at it, you know."
Is there that much difference in
In the old school, you know, everything was, there's a viewpoint and everything on each side is pretty much the same if you're going to, you know, in formal things. And, or you went into the big estate where it really is a park,
mm-hmm.
and very naturalistic in the old school of England and all that.
Capability Brown.
Yes, oh, definitely. And glad we heard about him for so long. And but then we got to a number of the others were coming along very strong, ECBO and some of those. And it was very good, you know.
So you were influenced by both schools?
Both schools. And I feel that some of the schools do not emphasize enough of the old history of the way things used to be. Simply because it'll never happen again.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never have 100-acre estate again, you know? And we went on, our prof took us on a field trip. Took four fellows clear back to the East Coast. And we stopped at these estates. He went to school at Lake Forest. He went to Michigan and then he's master's, I guess, at Lake Forest. Anyway, he knew all these big wealthy people from their estates. And he wrote to them and so we got into secret places. And you know, just beyond comprehension of what the people had at those days. The Lasker people, when he died, he gave it to the University of Chicago and they didn't want it. They didn't know what they're gonna do with it. You know? And first, if that happened out here, they'd subdivide it and tear everything down. I don't know whatever became of that piece of property, but this is, you know, they used lead for the rain gutters and downspouts.
Hmm.
They would have the reflecting pools that were made of the shield, the basin was made of lead and etched all on the side. And absolutely gorgeous work, you know. Craftsmanship,
mm-hmm.
which you don't have that today at all. You can't afford it, even if you could find them, you know. So it was a great experience to see all these things, and once in a while, up at Santa Barbara, you'll find a mistake like Madame Gralska. And she died here not too long ago, 96, and still had her boots on out working in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
But she was an old opera singer. And she had all the nice little details, the stone carvings, a lot of that we saw way back. But I think, I don't know if the city is turning that into a park or what they're doing up there. But anyway, it's quite an estate. It's open once a year to the architects.
Hmm.
And at least while she was alive, it was open to her. But it's quite a place. So.
So then the war came along.
Yeah.
And you were in the army.
Yeah.
European theater?
Yeah. We were supposed to go to, I was up at Fort Lewis, and we were supposed to schedule to go to the South Pacific. And they gave us the yellow fever shots up there, and when we got down to Fort Ord, the division went in the hospital. We all got yellow fever, or yellow jaundice. And in my ward that I was in, there were seven of the officers were hauled out the back door, you know. Mm-hmm. So that fouled up the War Department's thing, and that was another good thing that happened in my life. We didn't go to the South Pacific, and at least I think it was. At least the Germans fought a sort of a gentleman's war, you know. And so we invaded Casablanca with the first landing there, and on up to Algiers and Sicily, and fought a long time in Sicily. And however, we were made the greatest advance of any military unit up to that time in the history of the world. How fast we leaped out to get across the island and then had to fight up the north coast and look at Messina across the way. But and then went into Italy and fought up the boot for a long time. And at Christmas they pulled us out and went 22nd of January, I think it was, we invaded Anzio. So we sat out there for 4 or 5 months, you know, just trading shots. We had artillery, and our group was medium artillery, and you're supposed to be sitting back a ways, you know. Well, the general didn't like that. He wanted us up front. And sometimes I said, "What are you guys doing here? What happened to your family?" He said, "We're from the infantry." And I said, "Well, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be up there." He said, "No, we just got pushed back." He said, "Nobody told us." You know. And I said, "Stick around. I need help." So anyway, so I came home Naples in May of 44, 45. We invaded Europe June 6th of 44, so it was 44. Because we were on the high seas coming home when we got the word that they made the channel crossing. I remember that. So then I stayed here in the United States till the end of the war and taught school, gunnery school, and non-commissioned officer school and so on at Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
You were a major by then?
Not then, I was still captain. And when I retired, I retired a major, you know, in the reserve. They just do that.
Yeah, artillery is sort of a completely different kind of thing from your studies. How did you end up in the artillery?
Well, that was what they taught at Oregon State. They taught engineering, the engineering school taught engineers, and the social studies people taught the infantry, and the forestry and the agriculture students were artillery. Fortunately. And, again, but that's just the way the ball bounced, you know. And so we had a lot of people from Utah with us, and a whole bunch of the men were from the Midwest, Minnesota and Wisconsin, mostly as I remember.
So then you went to graduate school after?
Yeah, I came back and went back to school, and we had a child, oldest boy then, and he was 7 months old, and so they told us, "If you're coming back to school, bring your own house." And so we bought a trailer and went back up there to Corvallis, and so I spent a year just trying to get reoriented and use a pencil again. And I should have probably gone down to Oregon, but I went to Oak State. And so I stayed there a year, and then I came back down and got a job in Oakland and for the California Nursery Company. And they had their landscape architecture offices in the Franklin Building in downtown Oakland. And Mr. Roding was the owner, and it was an old family operation. His grandfather came to Fresno and brought the first cuttings, seedlings, and so on across by a covered wagon. Yeah. It's Roding Park right now.
In Fresno. That large park.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's Roding Park. Well, that's named after the old boy. And so, but Mr. Roding was not the one that I knew. Was a very nice man and Dale Hardy well met and everything, but he was not a businessman. And it got to the point I just had to pick up and leave, so I came back down here, and I guess 11 months later, and looked around and finally decided, well, I couldn't get hired by anybody, so I decided to hire myself. So I started in 47, practicing here.
Where were you living then?
We were living at 290 Park,
mm-hmm.
my mother's place, until we built this. We built this in 1950.
Oh.
So
what came out on this block in 1950?
Well, it was here. This was, these three lots weren't here. They were lots. I mean, there weren't houses here. And so we bought the middle of the three lots, and Burt, George Burt, the Press Telegram at that time, owned this property, and so he subdivided it, and they were our neighbors for quite a while, until the press did it. And Vermillion lived there, the mayor of the town,
mm-hmm.
and so we liked this area. It's kind of old, and yet there's new, and the interesting part of it is when we first moved in, there was lots and lots of kids, some young families, right up down the street. And then they all moved away, and they were just the old nuts like us. And all at once, here's kids running up and down the street again.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't ever live in an adult community, I don't believe.
Yeah.
I don't think I could stand it, be around all those old people. And, you know, but it's just great. And you know, that one married that one, and that one married that one, and kind of went around here a little bit of when they came and this and that.
It's a neighborhood
for them. Yeah, yeah, it is. And, so we raised our three sons here, and we like the place.
Well, you became a member of the American Society of Landscape Architects, I guess, in 1953?
I think it was 53.
What do you have to do to become a member of that organization?
Well, in those days, you applied, and then they had a committee that came around from your chapter, the Southern California chapter, and they would look at your work. I mean, you'd go around, and they'd talk to you and look at your books and, you know, see how you're handling yourself,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And if they agreed that you were okay, then they recommended that you be elected to membership.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you apply for membership, and first, almost always, you have to have a state license,
mm-hmm.
first. Maybe not always, I don't know. But that state license is a 3-day exam. And it's pretty tough, really tough. But if you have your state license, then the chapter doesn't do the investigating anymore, like they used to,
mm-hmm.
because you passed the state minimum, and as long as you have recommendations from other ESLA people, that they feel they're qualified to join.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it works out of that. You know. There have been times that I've met people who became members of the ASLA that had no right to even sign their name to anything as far as I was concerned. They didn't know anything. They were county people and worked up there in the tower and didn't ever. This one man all he knew was sprinklers. He didn't know plants. But he wasn't going to be around long, so I didn't do anything about it, but I almost did. You know, it wasn't right. But, you know, by and large, the whole thing is they've got a big membership now compared to what they used to be for a young profession. And so they're doing pretty well.
Well, all of that early work you did in Long Beach, was it a variety of residences?
Residences, and mostly residences, really. And Park Estate just opened then.
Yeah.
And so I got in with quite a group there, and we just referred from one to the other, to the other, to the other, you know.
Huh.
And there were some apartments and a few schools that I did, and that pattern had just gone on. I don't ever go out and I don't advertise. Well, originally you couldn't advertise. The only thing you could do is have your name in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could pass out your calling card. But that was all.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can advertise anything you want. But it's just referred. I don't advertise. I got joined the junior chamber and I joined the Kiwanis Club and you know, just get to be kind of known around and
mm-hmm.
a little bit and call on the architects now and then. But other than that, you know, so I just had a good referral all the time, apparently. Guess I didn't do anything too badly.
And then you became involved with projects for the city.
Yes, I had. They had a whole, and they were doing all this beautification business and putting in parking lots on the beach and things of that sort. I did.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for them. And of course I hate to point it out to anybody because it looked like the devil now. It's terrible. It hasn't been kept up. It isn't maintained at all. The city is not maintaining their properties, as far as I'm concerned. I guess don't have the money. And I think it's a low priority for the city. I'll admit, I suppose it's more important to have health services and other services than, you know, something to look at. But we do have a strong recreation department. We can't deny that. But the parks and all the street trees and just the ambience of the town is on the way down as far as
yeah.
I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that respect, you know. Now, of course, these new buildings are building down there. They're very beautifully landscaped. You cannot build anything in town anymore without a landscape architect's drawings.
Well,
yeah. I suppose you can apartments, maybe, but I don't know. I don't think you can. And maybe a residence you can. But anything of any consequence, they will not pass the plans until they see a planning plan and an irrigation plan.
Yeah.
And that's just to make sure that the place is going to be developed, you know. And there are certain restrictions and some certain percentage of a parking lot that has to have planting in it, you know. And if you don't meet those requirements, you can't have it. That's the way it's supposed to work. There are times that it has not worked that way here in town, and I've blown the whistle a couple of times. If it's too late, they've already given the permit and paved the lot, and,
yeah.
You know, somebody got paid off, I think. But,
what do you think about the redevelopment downtown, redevelopment areas?
I think it's great. I think it's fine. I just wish they'd build something big up around 10th Street or 6th Street. And instead of having it all at the beach, I think it would have tied the whole town together. When they were first going to build that mall, it was going to be on Ocean Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the big architects in town were pushing this and see that it's down there and all that. And I kept saying, why do you put it clear down there? You know the ocean front is going to build. Mm-hmm. You just know it's going to build. But you ought to get this thing up here, then look for 2 meet.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, no, you're all wrong. Well, then they finally did move it to 3rd.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And switch out. But I feel we ought to get, just like building this big tower in Los Angeles, right down